Pusik Dalit. So the truth is that a parsha like this, you gotta kind of wonder, what's going on? If you read the first two aliyahs of the parsha, and you see what happens with the Metzora, your first question should be, this is seemingly the most magical, craziest thing that anybody has to do, the Tahara of a Metzora. It rivals the Parah Aduma, what a person has to do by the Parah Aduma itself, that all of a sudden it becomes Tahor. I'm not gonna go through all of it, but the beginning is, V'tziva Kohen V'lokach L'mizeher, the Kohen commands, and they take for the person becoming Tahor, Shtei Tziporim Chayos Tahoros. Two birds that are alive, or I would say wild, and Tahoros. They're Tahor. The Eitz Erez, then you take cedarwood, the Tolash Shani the Ezov. That's interesting, I wrote it in the wrong way, but Tolash Shani the Ezov. And then you have hyssop, and you have this scarlet thread. Later on in Pasuk Zion, after you shecht one of the birds, it says, you sprinkle the blood from the hyssop and whatever it is on the mitaher from his tzoras seven times, and you have been mitaher him, and then you send away the live bird out to the field, you just send it out, let it fly away, and then it goes away forever. So our question is going to be twofold. Number one, what is going on with the two birds? Why does the mitzora, never do we have this concept of two birds. What is this do over here? And number two, what are you sending out the live bird for in the field? This is after you took the live bird and dipped it in the blood of the other shechted bird. You then take it and you send it out to the field. What's going on here? What's the remez? What are we going to do? That's going to be our question. That's what we're going to try to answer tonight. I didn't say anything yet.
Yes, you have. What's the difference? Is it the Sirla Zazel and
seemingly like the Sirla Zazel. That's going to be part of it. So that's going to be our question. So first of all, why are you commanded to take the birds? What do birds represent? So Rashi tells us that two birds are taken out of the other animal because he babbled. He spoke Lashon Hara. He was speaking about things that he shouldn't have been speaking about, which gave him the punishment of Tzaraas in the first place. So you take two birds that are known for babbling and chirping incessantly, therefore specifically taking birds. Since the Metzora spoke and couldn't stop speaking, we take birds which also cannot stop speaking. That's the idea behind it. The Ibn Ezra says you're allowed to take any bird you want, provided that it's not domesticated and it's a kosher bird. It's got to be kosher. It can't be domesticated. That's what the Ibn Ezra says. The Ramban says, L'achila should be a small bird that sings in the morning, like a sparrow or one of those birds, the song birds that you'd hear in the morning that goes out. That's the reason why. Says the Ramban, because it doesn't say oaf, it says tzipor. Tzipor is in tzap. It's got to be a morning bird, a bird that is a morning type bird. That's the bird that we're talking about over here. The Rambam in Hilchos Nagayim says it must be a tzipor dror, which means that a bird that does not nest in one specific place, but goes around from place to place to place, and that would be that. But it doesn't have a set home. But it could be any bird. All of these, all the Rishonim, they all agree that it's not one specific bird that you're using. It could be anything you have. But the purpose, says Rashi, is because of Lashon Hara. You spoke out something which shouldn't have been said, therefore you're bringing birds instead of that. The Panach Razak gives another reason. Since the Metzora sat by himself in a house for 7 days or 14 days or 21 days, however long it took him to become Tahor, however long it was, we bring birds that specifically fly around and don't spend much time roosting in their nests. Since this guy could not move and he was staying on his own out in the field, we take birds which are now going to be able to fly everywhere, which are now, they're able to go wherever they want. That's why we take birds, since they fly everywhere, different from an animal that obviously can walk everywhere. A bird can fly wherever he wants quickly and get out. That's the idea that it represents. The Targum Yonasan seems to say the birds represent what this man is doing, what the guy is doing wrong or right. He says if this Metzora does tshuva, if he does tshuva, then he will never get tzaraas again. This man will never get tzaraas again. He's promised. And that's the shechted bird. The bird will never come back again. It's shechted. It's gone. Your tzaraas, represented by the bird, is gone and it'll never come back. But if he doesn't do so properly and does do something wrong, speaking Lashon Hara again, then the tzaraas will come back like the bird that goes free, and the bird that goes free comes back as well. That's the bird that flies back to him. The Medrash Tanhuma does tell us that if the bird that was sent away comes back, the Metzora, right, will get his tzaraas again. We don't want the bird flying back. Perhaps that's the reason why we traumatize it by dipping it in the bird, the blood of its fellow bird, and then we say, like, go out there, bird, and we assume that it's never coming back again because it's sitting there like a freak with blood all over it from its friend. I would assume that's the reason why. But Targum Yonasan says you don't don't want it to come back. But if it does, it's kosher. If it does, it's kosher. The Moshe Zakenu says something very similar. Just like the shechted bird is going to be buried and can't move from its place, you cannot allow this sras to ever return to you again. Don't allow yourself to be a mitzora ever again. Birds fly away. They don't come back. That's the idea. Rav Avigdor Miller adds on. And this is classic Rav Avigdor Miller style. Birds, when they run away, is different from an animal when they run away. You see an animal run away. You see an animal swim away. Okay, it's cool. They're running and you see their body is going away and that's that. But a bird flying away, it seems to us, to somebody looking at it, to somebody, you're impressed by it. It's spectacular to watch a bird fly away. To watch a bird just go up into the sky and eventually until it's gone. It's not like an animal just running away from you or a fish swimming away from you. I could swim. I could walk. I could also run. I could do that as well. But to fly away is so spectacular. Something that a person sees, he's sitting there and he's saying, it's a fascination that you have with the birds themselves. This is the concept. The mitzora has to look back at his sickness. Look back at the fact that he was gone. He was sitting as if he was in a jail cell. As if he was jailed and he couldn't get out. He had nothing. He has a lifelong duty to always look back and say to God, thank you for healing me. Thank you for getting rid of my tzaras. There are some people that have tzaras, whatever tzaras represents, some types of diseases that go forever. But this tzaras flew away from me like a bird. And that's why, says Rav Avigdor Miller, we want a bird. We want it to look spectacular. We want somebody to be so impressed by it. There's a great story that happened not so long ago. There was a group that was taking these seals from the ocean that had gotten all this oil on them, etc., and washing them off. I'm not making fun of what they were doing or poking fun of what they were doing. I think that actually is a really, really worthy thing. I just don't think they should be getting $1 million to do it. But these seals were all filled with oil. They cleaned them off. They got them, and they had this whole ceremony. And they put them back into the sea. They put them back into the sea, and they had all this stuff, and they were videotaping it and everything. And they had the seals going in. They're cheering. Right? Everybody's clapping, and they go one, and then two, and then a killer whale comes and eats them both. Okay? Everybody's sitting there, and there's a video out there. I don't know if you can find it on YouTube, but you probably could, right? They might have taken it down. It might be on Vimeo, like, you know, one of those that nobody else can watch except for us, because we're the only people that are worthy. But it might be out there. But it's hilarious. They say that the people are just, like, watching, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh. And, like, one person calls out, and like, that's nature. Like, that's the way it is. Like, what else are you going to do when it comes to that? See, it's different when you have a bird flying away. I guess in theory it could be like a hawk comes and grabs it. But it's not like that. We just see it as something spectacular. That's the idea. It reminds us that we survived to tell the tale of what it's like to be a mitzora. That's the idea behind it. Okay, our second question. Why is it two birds? Why is one bird not enough? Why do you have to have the two birds, one shechted and one sent away? What's the shot? So the Kliyakar says, there are two different kinds of speech that a person has from his mouth. One is speech that is usher, and the other is speech that is a mitzvah to do. He's ignoring the Kliyakar, the obvious speech that is just the heter. I would assume that the way the Kliyakar is learning it is that if you're not speaking out something that's a mitzvah to say, then it might as well be usher. That's my assumption of what he's doing over here, although I'm not positive what the Kliyakar means by this. But those two of them over here, the speech that is forbidden is represented by the shechted bird. You shecht that bird, you get rid of that speech. You don't want to have dibor iser, any dibor that's considered usher. You don't want to have that. But when a person davens correctly and he learns correctly, that's the mayim chayim represented, the water that you pour into the cup that you dip the blood into, that you shecht into, he still needs some hachna and shiftless. He needs to knock himself down a little bit, knock down his ego. That's the cedarwood and the hyssop, that the cedarwood is so tall, he's connected with the hyssop, which is so small, the grass is on the ground. To realize his station in life, says the Kliyakar, what he has to do, then he's going to be healed. The Chidah says this as well. The two birds represent good speech and then speech that is not so good. Speech that is just behetter, barely behetter, right, in order to be able to go through. And we work on that and turn it into more Torah, do more things with it. That's the idea behind it. In fact, the Ben Ishchai says this, hints to Yushalmi. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said, if I was God, I would have created man with two mouths. One mouth that only spoke out Divrei Torah, and another mouth that spoke out everything else that he needed to do in this world. Why are we metame, our mouths that speak Torah, with Lashon Hara? Why would we do such a thing? Says Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, I think there should be two mouths. And then he said to himself, it's better this way. If there would only be one mouth, then 2 mouths, I'm sorry. There would be 2 mouths. You would use both of them to speak out Lashon Hara. You'd be competing with each other which mouth can speak out more Lashon Hara than the other, which mouth can be more powerful than the other. That's what would have happened. And that's why it's not good to have 2 mouths, says Rishon Bayochai. You'd rather have one. And here's the idea with the two birds represents, says the Ben Ishkai. The 2 mouths are the 2 birds, one for good and one for evil, what the mouth should have been. This guy used his mouth for Lashon Hara. He shechted the mouth that spoke Lashon Hara. He's only left with the mouth that speaks out Torah. This is what the guy is left with. It's as if there's nothing left except for that one mouth that speaks out Divrei Torah. That's all he has left. That's the idea behind it. The Chasam Sofer says the exact opposite. The shechted bird represents the words of Torah. Because you can't really learn until you're willing to be Moser Nefesh for it. When you give up something for Torah, you shecht yourself for Torah, then it's real Torah. Until you shecht yourself, it's just not there. Speech, on the other hand, that is unnecessary should be sent out to the fields. Send that out to the fields. Get rid of it. You don't need it. It shouldn't be here. That's the idea. Keep them as far away from you as you can. Rav Moshe Sternbach says there's 2 types of Lashon Hara that could be represented over here. Some people speak badly about their friends in private. They don't want everybody to know about it. They have no desire to publicize anything. They want people to know that this guy did something bad. Or they want to at least brag about what they had seen. Or maybe tell a story they might not have known. They want that. But they don't want everybody to know what they're talking about. There are other people who are very willing to put it on the front page of New York Post, everything that had happened. They're willing to put it on. I'm saying that because it's basically, you know, it's like National Enquirer. You're dealing with something where everybody will just say, like, you know what, I might as well, if I'm going to speak Lashon Hara, I want it to be awesome Lashon Hara. There are people that are saying, we want it to be that guy that's up. They make fun of everything and everyone in any way that they can. The first bird that's shechted immediately refers to the second guy who's got to be stopped as soon as he can. That type of Lashon Hara, which again gives you tzaraas, has to be shechted immediately, get rid of it. Such a person cannot be there. The first guy, the guy that speaks it in private but not in public, is a bit better. We throw it to the fields. That guy can be improved. He'll get a little bit better as time goes on. He'll learn what he's doing wrong and make it better at some point. That's the idea behind it. The Chasam Sofer says in Drushos that when someone does something wrong, when he speaks Lashon Hara, he does 2 things. He causes issues down here and he causes an accuser up there in Shemayim. Shemayim accuses you and says that you did something wrong. So, once again, it's the same idea. When you do tshuva, you're fixing both issues. Shechting the bird says, I won't do anything bad anymore. I won't cause any more strife. And then sending out to the field says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to work on myself. I'm going to be spodeid and stay by myself and work on myself until I make it better. That's the idea behind it. But nonetheless, there's still got to be a better hint than all this to be able to figure out what's going on with these birds. Because it really, even if you say that it refers to Lashon Hara in some way, shape, or form, like we've been saying, or a good person and a bad person, there's still something going on here. What in the world are you doing? Again, shechting one bird into a kli that's filled with water, taking that blood, right, and catching it inside that kli. So you got water in the cup, and you have blood in the cup. Taking the live bird, dipping it inside, sending it out to the field, taking hyssop and cedar wood, and tying it with scarlet thread, dipping it inside that blood and sprinkling it on the guy 7 times. There's got to be something to that. Because it doesn't make any sense. It literally, it's too far off. Rav Hirsch says that this cleansing ritual reminds us of a bunch of things. First of all, the 2 birds have to look exactly the same. And one of them is shechted, one of them is sent away. So you already gave it away, right? You already gave it away. But the fact is, it's okay, it's fine. I'm fine with that. But these birds remind you of the Seir La'Azazel. You have 2 goats on Yom Kippur. They look exactly the same. One remains where it is and is shechted in the Beit HaMikdash. And the other one is sent to Azazel and killed over there, pushed off the cliff and sent down to Azazel. Whatever Azazel is, the cliff that's around there. So that's weird. The free birds, the birds over here, reminds you of a paraduma. The paraduma cannot have been worked before. If it's worked, if it ever did any work at all, right, then it's automatically possible for paraduma. And so do these birds have to be free birds that have never been domesticated at all. The Mayim Chaim and the Azov, the Shmi Solas, and the Cedarwood all remind you of the paraduma as well. That's what they did by this paraduma. They mix in the ash of the paraduma with the clear water, with the Mayim Chaim. They take it with the little, what's it called, with the little the sticks or whatever it is, and they sprinkle it toward the guy in order to make him tahor. The ideas seem to be extremely the same. What's going on here? Why is it compared to paraduma as well as the Seir La'Azazel, the 2 goats that we have on Yom Kippur? Says Rav Hirsch, this guy is not a very social guy. And this guy messed up so badly that he was able to speak Lashon Hara, and he messed over people by getting them into fights with one another, maybe even a husband and his wife, by speaking about things that he shouldn't have been speaking about. This guy doesn't belong in society. And we spoke about this before, the concept of what a mitzorah stands for, a real mitzorah. But a mitzorah is a person who doesn't know how to live life. He has no idea what life is all about. He thinks that it's all about popularity. And as long as I say something, if I'm doing this, then everybody will like me, and then I'm living the best life. He doesn't realize that's not what you do. To be a good person means that you have a bunch of friends, and that you don't speak about other people. It's not going to make you more popular. It's not going to make you somebody that's there. This guy does not have the social values necessary to live in a community of men. He doesn't deserve to be there. That's what the mitzvah is. In order to join the community, he has to knock down his nature. Now, what does he have? He has an animalistic nature inside him, like we all do. We have what's called the nefesh bahamis, an animalistic side to our soul that is so driven toward pleasure and desire and to do things that it wants to do, that your nefesh elokis, your neshama from up above, your neshama which is holy, spends its entire time fighting it, so to speak, as in the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. You're two different sides of your neshama, so to speak, that are fighting each other. It's a war, a milchama going on, in which your nefesh elokis says, do this, and your nefesh bahamis says, I want to do that. So to speak, your heart, which is filled with taiva, is fighting your brain, which is so filled with all the thoughts of godliness and goodness that you can have in this world. And it keeps going. The brain tries to affect the heart tries to affect the brain, and it's getting messed up for one another. Each one is fighting each other literally to the death, not able to be able to get each other to do what they want them to do. This is what the job of the mitzvah is. I know you want to talk about that other person. I know you want to look good by saying something about that guy. Don't do it. Knock down that taiva. Knock down your animalistic nature. Allow your neshama to come out. So over here, it's not about killing something. It's about subordinating that part, your heart, the taivas, the hatzit, the head, the place where taiva stands, knocking it down and allowing your brain to rule over it, to know that God is in charge at all times. Shechting the bird is one way of doing that, by showing it absolute fear. Call that the Akedas Yitzchak. The idea of knocking it down and destroying it. And the other way is by sending it out, sending it away, by making it go into exile, by putting it in ghost, by taking it away and showing, this is where you belong. Such a person who cannot deal with other people has to be sent away completely. And that's two ways to be able to knock down your animalistic tendencies. It's the exact same idea by the Seir La'Azazel and the Seir La'Hashem. One goat, they're both animals, but one goat is shechted to Hashem because it's the right way of subordinating yourself beyond Hashem. The goat, the animal part of you, is literally subordinated to what Hashem wants. You're knocking yourself down. And the other side of you, the animalistic part that cannot be subdued, that you can't knock down, is sent away completely. Get out of the Beis Hamikdash. We don't want you here. You're sending it away and exiling it to get rid of it. It's the same concept. And so too with the Paraduma. The Paraduma represents that this guy was connected to death. This guy either touched a dead body or was near a dead body, went to a cemetery, needs to become Tahor. So the Paraduma is the same way. Burning down the entire cow, a massive cow, into ashes. Remember, cows were their money back then. Shechting a cow that was a red heifer was an extremely expensive endeavor. And I know, when you were Tamei Meis, you didn't have to shech the cow every time. Just had to redo the water. But you think to yourself, this was an entire massive, rare, maybe even endangered red cow, which we can't even find. With all the people that are looking for a paraduma nowadays, we can't find one. I know, they claim there's one. Sure, they go, but we can't even find one. We've been looking for years, and you can't even find one. And in that sense, what this represents, what we're trying to do is we're trying to say, you're knocking down your animalistic side, taking it apart, destroying it, either by shechting it completely or getting rid of it, by showing it goes somewhere else. Asher, you had a question before?
No.
You're good? Okay, so I have it. The Moshe of Zakenim brings down from Elazar Migarmizia, and Rabbeinu Ephraim says it as well, that it also represents the two Yitzhari, the Yitzhar and the Yitzhar Tov. And it's the same basic idea. I don't don't think we need to go through this, but it's the idea of using your Yetzer Hara for good. Sometimes you can. You have kas. You have anger. Sometimes anger can be used for good. For example, I mean, I'm not saying that I do this, but I happen to work as a mashgiach in the yeshiva. Some of you know that. Some of you might not. Right? And there are times where guys do things that are not exactly what they're supposed to do. Like, I don't know, go to NCSY or something, right? I had to say that because David's here. So, by the way, like, you know, there are times where I look at somebody and I yell. I have to. I have no choice. So there's two ways of doing it. There are times where I actually get angry. Of course there are times when I actually get angry, because if you know the people that I work with, and some of you do intimately, then obviously I'm going to get angry. That's obvious, right? But there are many times where I'm going to show the face of absolute anger without feeling it whatsoever, where I have to. The guy's not going to listen if I don't show that anger. If I just go in and I just say, like, come, get up. It's time. It's 11:43. It's time to get up. That's not going to work. He's going to be like, oh, thank you. And then go back to sleep, because I just sang him a lullaby. If I go in and I'm like, get up! And the guy gets that little bit of a shock of just like, especially if he was sleeping, you know, for 12 hours, right? He gets up and all of a sudden it's like, oh. It's that little fear factor. And not always does that work. I'm sure some of you know that. Not always does it work. But the show of anger has the ability to go in a certain direction. You can do it. If you use anger in the proper direction, if you use it in the proper fashion, you can allow it to become good. That is using your Yetzer Hara for something positive instead of always using it for something negative. You can think of other midos that are entirely the same way. Using gaiva, your ego, in a positive light, to be able to allow for good things to happen through it. That can happen. Not only can it happen, it's usually the way to succeed. It's the only way to be able to succeed in order to get it down perfectly fine. That's one idea. Now let's go into the Kabbalistic type of idea. We already said that it's compared to the seer mishaleach, right? I'm not going to go into the entire thing of what the seer la'azazel means, the seer that's sent out to Azazel, and what it means. It's sort of like bribery for the Satan. The best example I gave in a Parshas Akharemos 4 years ago would probably be an example of the Ramban, who says it's like a guy going to the king, inviting everyone to his party. Everybody goes inside, and the king goes up to a certain person there and says, listen to me, I know this is a massive party and whatever it is, I want you to go invite the minister of war. And the guy says, like, wait, the minister of war? The guy smells horribly. He's got terrible table manners. He's that guy who's like pouring like stuff all over. He's got like, he smells horribly. You know any stories about Beethoven? You know who Beethoven was?
Yeah.
You know, you heard that he was always disgusting in everything he did. Like, he wouldn't be invited, even though he's a tremendous piano player. Like, nonetheless, they would never invite him to anything because he smelled horribly. And back then, if you smelled horribly, you were just a little bit worse than everybody else, right? And his eating habits were horrible. He used to dribble all over himself while he was eating. He was like a terrible, terrible person. They had to invite him. So this guy, the minister of war, was like Beethoven, right? So nobody wanted him there. So the king said, I need him here. He's got to come. He said, I really don't want him. So the king said, give him my portion. Give him my food. Allow him to take my food itself. That's what the Seir La'azazel is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not allowing you to give a korban to the Satan. That's not what Seir La'azazel means. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving of his portion to the minister of war, so that the minister of war doesn't accuse later on or take that guy to court later on for not inviting him to the party. The idea, says the Alkur Veni, is these birds are being sent out to the fields in order to knock down our accusers. Anybody know what accusers are out there in the fields? Which actually hints within their name themselves why they're called what they are, because they're out in the field. Shadim. Shadim are called Shadim because they're in the Sadeh. That's why they're called Shadim. It's one of the four answers as to why they're called Shadim. In order to knock down the Shadim, the Mazik, and the damagers that come up against us, for that reason we send these birds out to the field to knock them down and destroy them from us. That's the idea behind it. The Rabbeinu Bechaya also says this. It's also being sent out to the Shadim. He says the exact same idea. And then Rav Wolfson says an absolute crazy idea. There are four things that are make you consider as if you're dead. Anybody know what they are? Four things that make you like this. Not having any children. What? Losing all your money, being poor. Mitzora, meaning the guy who has tzoras, or missing one. Blind. A person who's blind. And you're right that embarrassed is there, but embarrassed is because you're killing someone by embarrassing him, as opposed to it being that the person is actually dead. But those four are there. Tzoras is a disease given by the Malach HaMaves himself, says the Reb Wolfson. I've never heard this before. It comes from the Malach HaMaves himself. Anything that comes from the Malach HaMaves is irreparable. It cannot be fixed. Just like death cannot be fixed, Sarat cannot be fixed. It's impossible to take away. But the guy is able to be healed. The Kohen looks at him and he's able to be healed. If the guy does tshuva, he's able to get himself healed. So we see that it can be healed. How can it be the Malach HaMaves gave it? The answer is, says Wolfson, it's not healed. It's exchanged. It's given to a Jew, and if the Jew does tshuva, he's healed, and the tzaraath comes away from him and goes upon another person in the other nations of the world who deserves the tzaraath more than you. So the Sultan brings it down, the Malach HaMaves brings it down to the Jew, and if the Jew does tshuva, it leaves, but it's not gone. The tzaraath is still in the world, it's just exchanged and given over. Shfoch chamascha el agayim asher lo yidu'ucha. Anybody know what those words mean? Spill out your wrath upon the other nations, right? Upon the other nations who do not know you. That's the concept over here, says Reb Wolfson. It goes over. This is the idea of the live bird being sent out to the fields. The live bird being sent out to the fields is the tzaraat, literally the tzaraat, is shechted from you and then sent out to someone else who's out in the fields. Someone else who deserves this a little bit more. Esav is known as an ish sodeh, a man of the field. It's brought over to him. That's the concept behind it, and that's that. It's an amazing, amazing idea. If the bird comes back, what happens? You're not allowed to get in. The tzaraat comes back to you, because that means that Hashem didn't want the tzaraat to leave you. So if the bird comes back, that means there was no other nation that was going to take it from you. It instead remains by you, and that's that. That's the amazing part about what happened with Naaman. If anybody wants to know the whole thing behind it, I could say it, it's just too long. But there's an unreal shot that he says regarding Naaman and how Gehazi ended up becoming the person who took on the tzaraat of Naaman. Crazy, crazy shot. There's another thing. Remember I said before that you take the live bird and you dip it into the blood of the shechted one and then you send it out to the fields itself? The Chizkuni says the reason why is because we don't want it coming back. So the reason why we dip it in the blood is not so that it's traumatized and that it doesn't come back on its own. It's that the other birds are like, hey, what do you do with Larry? No. No. Is that Larry's blood? And they kill the bird. Crazy, right? That's what the Chizkuni says. The bird is dipped in blood so that the other birds get angry at it and kill it for killing their friend Larry. That's what they're upset about. That's what they're upset about. It's crazy, says the Chizkuni. I think that the remez is, if this bird stands for social miscues, social issues, then trying to soak in what others have, in other words, dipping yourself in the blood, while all that does is makes you more soiled. It destroys yourself, and others become so angry and upset at him, they want you out. They can't deal with you anymore. That's the idea behind it. Reb Moshe points out that it seems the Kohen commanded him to buy the birds. Why does the Kohen have to command him to buy the birds? It says, Vitziva HaKohen. The Kohen has to command it. Just let the guy buy his birds. What's the big deal? Why do you need a Kohen specifically commanding it? So I thought it was obvious. I don't know how this worked exactly. The birds could not be domesticated, right? They have to be live birds and like Sipur Dror, according to the Rambam, right? How did you catch them? Oh, did a guy just go out there with like a little net? And if you say, well, somebody else would catch them and then put them in cages, well, that's not a free bird. I'm not so sure how the process went. Did you literally have to go out there and start becoming like a bird catcher, right, in order to be a Metzorah? Like, you imagine you are, I mean, I guess you have nothing else to do for 7 days out in the field, so you might as well go catch birds, right? But I it's strange that it seems that's the way it has to be. Maybe there's another way of learning it, but it seems that way. Reb Moshe points out the reason why the Kohen has to tell him what to do. What's up, David? Yeah. Nothing? You had a little thing like that. Reb Moshe points out that the reason why it has to be this way is because there are many things that people never think they need to ask about, and they just automatically do them. There's so many things where people don't ask shilas. They just assume what they're doing is okay. Even this, in which I can get any two birds, right? The Kohen has to command you. You have to ask the Rav what to do and figure out how to do it. He gives examples, Reb Moshe says. He said, I have very few people coming to me asking me where they should be spending their miser. They have a certain amount of maisa that they have to give. It's very rare that a person comes up to me and says, how should I spend my maisa? You know why, says Ramosha? Because everyone thinks it's their money. And if it's their money, they get to decide what to spend it on. Said Ramosha, it's not true. There are chiyuvim of what you have to spend your maisa on. There are levels of what you should be spending your maisa on. Who comes first and second and third and fourth? There are levels. But nobody ever thinks to ask. That's the lesson being learned from this parsha. That even when you think something is obvious, or I get to decide it on my own, no. The Kohen has to tell you what to do. The Kohen gets to say to you, this is what you do over here, and that's what you have to do. There's another thing he says. How many questions do I get, says Ramosha, about how to be mechanech your children? How to raise your children properly? How many times do people go to Rabbanim and say, how do I do it? Not afterward, 20 years down the line when the kid's about to marry a shiksa, and you're just like, Rabbi, save me. You're 23 years too late. 23 years too late if the kid is 20. If you're asking, how do you save my child from marrying a shiksa? 23 years too late. It should come to me before it even becomes a thought in your head, how to prepare yourself beforehand to be able to have a child. That's how Revolvi puts it. You have to start way beforehand. You have to start when you're a 14-year-old bachur in yeshiva. You have to start preparing right then to have children that are going to be talmid chacham. That's the only way. You can't just start all of a sudden. It's not going to happen that way. You have to build your way up and do it in such a way that you can do it instead of expecting the mop-up in aisle 7 that the rabbi is going to have to do right in order to be able to take care of it when things are already bad. That's what Moshe said. It's a brilliant idea. It's a brilliant idea to start asking beforehand to be able to know what to be able to do. This parsha tells us the Mitzor needs to do tshuva. In order to do tshuva, he has to ask, what do I do? How do I work on this? What do I do to do this? This is not like going up to a rav and just telling him to do anything. There are people I know that go to Rabbanim and say, like, Rabbi, should I go to the bathroom now? That clearly is not the way to go. That's too much, right? That's obvious. That you don't ask those types of questions because they're too weird. Right? But there is a point where the important things are like, you get the sodos down, the foundations down, before you have to start making guesswork before yourself. So going back to the original question, what's going on with these two over here, and can we answer it in a different way? Is there some other way of trying to understand it? Rosh Shlomo Gansfried. Anybody know who Rosh Shlomo Gansfried is? Very good. Very good. Yalkut Lekach Tov. You know, one of those Likud song. It's actually, I'll just tell you, Daniel, this is all due to you. I didn't have my chavrusas on Tuesday from 8 to 8:30. I was by myself, so I literally had nothing to do. So I sat here, and I didn't bring any svarim other than what I had in front of me, so I decided I was going to look on the shelves, and I found a Yalkut Lekach Tov. It's right there. It's at top shelf, second one from the right. There's a Yalkut Lekach Tov over there. I never look at the safer, but it has this board from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch in there. So this is yours, okay?
Thank you, Gabriel.
I'll thank Gabriel also. It says, we know the purpose of korbanos are because we're supposed to look at the animals if they're dying for our sins. In other words, this animal is really me. I should be shechted. My blood should be spilled. Everything is like me. I should be burned up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the purpose of a korban is. If you would only have one bird, and you shecht that bird, and the bird would be gone, I would think that speech, represented by the shechted bird, is pure evil. And a person should be silent his entire life. Should be like a monk, sitting on a mountain, not saying anything to anyone, ever. And that's the way to go. Because if that's what it is, it's one bird that's shechted, and the bird represents my speech, as we said before, then that's that. We should just sit there and not say anything at all. Now there is a Mishnah in Perkei Avos, at the end of Perek Aleph. I found that the best thing for a person is shtika. But that doesn't mean that you always have to be silent. Sometimes you must speak up. That's why we have a second bird. It's a second bird that's sent out to the fields. There are some words that bring about life that you need to be able to say. Sometimes we shecht, sometimes we send it out. That's the idea behind it. The Maharshi Loch says the idea of not allowing the birds to be cooped up inside and to spread their wings. But we're going to end up with one thing over here, so Sefes Bracha. It is weird, right? The whole process is weird. I would assume that if we were there at the time, I'll give you an example. Nowadays, you barely ever get to see a chalitza. What's a chalitza? When a husband dies without any children, then the wife has to do either yibum or chalitza, marry or do the process of chalitza with her brother-in-law, right? With her husband's brother, her dead husband's brother. So that has to happen. We don't do yibum anymore because of Abba Shol, it's a whole thing. But we do chalitza. Chalitza is so rare
so rare to happen, Baruch Hashem, because people, Baruch Hashem, have a lot of children, and death is not as common as it was back then 100 years ago. Chalitza is very, very rare, but they do do it. So the last time there was a chalitza in Chicago, I was not in Chicago, I was in Eretz Yisrael at the time, but the last time it happened in Chicago, they brought them over to the basin. It was somebody in the suburbs, I don't know where, Buffalo Grove, Highland Park, one of those, and they brought over. There was about 100 people that went to go watch it. You have a process like chalitza. It was unbelievable, taking off the shoe, right? Taking off the shoe of the guy, spitting down on the ground in front and saying that he won't accept me, saying over the psukim. It's such a rarity to find. They even have a shoe that they got from the CRC. They have one from a Hollywood guy, one of those people that make all the costumes for all these movies from like ye old whenever. They made them a chalitza shoe, a little shoe that like goes up. It's like a little sandal with leather that ties up all the way around. It's the coolest little shoe that they put on, that they have on top of the feet themselves, and you can make different sizes that it can fit all. It's one size fits all to be able to go through. It's amazing what they have. But it only happens, again, it's 2016. The last time this happened was before I came to Chicago, so it was around 2003, 2004. And around that time, that's when the last chalitza, you never get to see it. Said to Tosafos Bracha, this was such a rare process. To see this happen, the whole mitzorah and taras of mitzorah, everyone wanted to get involved. They made it public. They purposely made it public. So the pshat is, when a person becomes tamei, and he becomes a mitzorah, tamei tamei yikra. He's got to call out loud and say, stay away from me, I'm tamei. Stay away from me, I'm tamei. He's got to do that. He's got to call it out loud and tell everyone, stay away. That's what he has to do. So when he's tahor, we purposely do something, says Rav Baruch Epstein. Something that's going to get everyone involved, where everyone is like, whoa, what is going on here? We're purposely making it loud and crazy. We want everyone to know about it. So we publicize it by sending away a mother bird, a little bird or any bird, that's dipped in blood and taking the hyssop and sprinkling him. Not necessarily for the process, which we already somewhat explained, but for the whole idea of, oh man, I really want to see this. That everybody comes in so that everyone knows this guy is tahor. This guy's a good guy now. He's not a person that's bad. He's better. It's the publicizing what he did wrong. Now we're publicizing what he's doing right. That's the idea behind it. We're sort of freeing him from his restraints, allowing him to fly free. That's the idea of what we're doing over here. So altogether, we explained why we have the birds, we talked about the talking, whatever, everything like that. We gave three different answers for that. Rav Victor Miller's whole idea of how it's, the whole concept of looking at a bird running away and how awesome that is. We talked about why like two birds, the remez to Dibor, either the Kliuk or the Ben Yishai, the Chassam Sofer, Rav Sternbach. We talked about Rav Hirsch at length, and then the Moshe of Zakenim at length from the Rabbeinu Ephraim. We talked about the Yalkut Ruvani and Rav Wolfson, how Tzaraas is sort of like a Kabbalistic idea of how it has to be switched and given over. The Chizkuni, which is that the birds are going to kill it. Rav Moshe's lesson in Chinuch, and also in how to ask Shailas and try to ask before anything happens. And then finally, the Lekach Tov and the Tosefes Bracha that says how the publicizing, showing everybody what it is also important. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbos.